Something That Argues With Its Own Construction, written by Tucuxi, read by Catalina Hart. An E-rated Heaven Official's Blessing fanfiction with a pairing of Fangxin / Mucheng, with the additional text of Dom Sub, Post Canon, Sub Drop, Top Drop, Asexual Mucheng, Praise Kink, Canon Typical Violence, Canon Typical Bickering, Under-Negotiated Kink, Kink Negotiation, Pining, Established Relationship, Aftercare, and No Aftercare. Mucheng stares at the pile of paperwork on his desk and gives thanks that gods don't actually need to sleep. He still does much of the time, just as the heavenly city observes a night and day cycle that is completely arbitrary. It breaks up time, provides markers of passing time other than festivals and annual observances, and sleep is something to do. But right now, looking at the still impressive backlog of prayer spread before him, Mucheng sighs and resigns himself to yet more sleepless nights. A lot of prayer triage while he rebuilds his spiritual energy, and far too much utterly thankless paperwork. His subordinates, especially Lei Su, did keep everything humming along well during his week-long self-imposed absence. The prayers are organized just as he wishes, and he's made a significant dent in them since taking care of Cao Jun and disproving the rumors that, admittedly, he himself started by accusing Fangxin in the Heavenly Square. The fight with Cao Jun wasn't even that hard in the end. The Western General had been fading for some time even before he threw his lot in with Sun Wu, before he made the foolish decision to broadcast his spinelessness to his followers and lost much of their faith. He hadn't hit as hard as Fangxin and didn't know Mucheng's weaknesses as well. It still hadn't been an easy fight. No fight against a martial god is ever precisely easy. But the outcome of their one-on-one combat had not been in any kind of doubt from the first moment they crossed blades. Mucheng had made sure to broadcast the battle, and a carefully pre-planned monologue about deceit, entrapment and betrayal into the dreams of his followers so they could see him get his revenge, though they could observe his continued strength and unbroken cultivation woes. Still, Mucheng thinks. His eyes are drawn to the single scroll that has been sitting to one side on his desk for some weeks. If he hadn't told Jilian what had happened, if Jilian hadn't roped in Huachang, if Huachang hadn't crushed the rest of Cao Jun's ghost alleys, well, perhaps he should have taken Fangxin along with him after all. It surely wouldn't have displayed too much weakness to invite someone else who was wronged on a revenge mission, even if Fangxin is always a little bit twitchy in Ghost City. The mental image of Fangxin twitching away from female spirits in Ghost City reminds him that the other god is probably still passed out on top of Mucheng's bed. Again. Mucheng has no frame of reference beyond a handful of sticky, awkward, shameful dreams in his adolescence, but Fangxin always seems to need an inordinate amount of time to recover after Mucheng talks him to an orgasm. Surely not everyone passes out or becomes a limp, shaking wreck after every single time they have sex. It seems thoroughly impractical. Mucheng shakes his head and goes back to answering prayers. He insists that his temples all sell their own incense at set price points that range from the astronomically expensive to the very, very cheap. Unlike some gods who answer only the prayers of those who have literal money to burn, Mucheng's attendants collect prayers and sort them by which sort of incense accompanied them. Now he pulls from each pile in turn, going through them at a steady clip. New attendants in the palace of General Zhuan Zhen sometimes try to deprioritize the prayers that accompany the cheapest incense. Some have even burned them or thrown them in the trash. None of them have made that mistake twice, not since Mucheng summarily demoted a repeat offender a few hundred years ago, sending him back down to die in the mortal realm after a sorrow, vicious and very public tongue-lashing. It takes more time this way, but the prayers of the poor are sometimes easier to answer than those of the rich, and not everyone born poor remains that way. It's a practical, strategic approach to building his followers and retaining loyalty of those who fall on hard times, as well as ensuring the continued support of those who do well for themselves. It has nothing to do with the unheard prayers of Mucheng's childhood. Shut up. Mucheng is working his way through a set of prayers that will be fairly easy to answer when Fangxin's voice enters his personal array. Mucheng, he hears. Fangxin sounds exhausted, stripped bare of bravado, posturing, anger. Just a minute, Muqing sends back. He needs only to send a few haunting dreams to some key toughs in a minor city for them to stop harassing one of his more loyal followers. He makes the appropriate notes, then tunes back into the array. What is it? He asks. Fangxin always leaves after he recovers himself. Usually it doesn't take this long either. Where are you? Fangxin asks. He sounds quieter than usual. The softer timbre of his voice makes him sound smaller, as if he's been diminished somehow. Doing work, Muqing says. He looks down at the piles of scrolls and logbooks and feels a headache coming on. He doesn't want to be answering prayers right now, but it needs to be done. His wants haven't ever come first, and the never-ending work of maintaining divinity is necessary. It's late, Fangxin says. He sounds almost petulant. If Muqing didn't know better, he'd think Fangxin was distressed. Why did you leave? Some of us don't make a habit of pissing off Ling Wen by being late with our paperwork, Muqing retorts. This isn't strictly true. Ling Wen has been exasperated by the uneven flow of paperwork from Zhan Zhen's temple recently, after the week-long hiatus and following flood of catch-up work. But there's nothing he can do about that except keep processing prayers. Oh, Fangxin says, not fighting back. You're still behind? He sounds off-kilter. He pauses. Can I help? Muqing's first instinct is a vicious denial. He doesn't need anyone's pity. He doesn't need to rely on handouts, on charity. But his gaze catches on the scroll, the list of ghosts, and he remembers Fangxin's declaration that he's never wanted Muqing gone, how essential Zhilian's help had been, unbeknownst to him, how crucial Fangxin's presence would have been under other circumstances. Dress properly first, he commands, not wanting a repeat of the one time Fangxin wandered out of Muqing's bedroom barefoot, wearing only poorly belted inner robes. The lock on his bedroom is key to Fangxin for now. It's practical. It means he'll be able to leave without Muqing having to be interrupted. Muqing eyes the heights of the various stacks of prayers, judges that he has completed about a tenth of the outstanding ones in each of the lowest and second lowest tiers, and moves up one incense level. When Fangxin slips in, Muqing is swearing under his breath at a prayer for marital harmony. He's a martial god. A celibate martial god. What is he supposed to know about keeping a husband from losing sexual interest and taking a second wife or a concubine? His experience in matters of the flesh is only several weeks old and limited to a single person. A person who has lowered himself into a chair at the side of the room without a word, hair still unbound, though his robes are belted properly and he's wearing shoes. Here, Muqing says and tosses him the scroll. Why the fuck am I getting marital prayers anyway? Isn't that your department? Fangxin almost fumbles the catch, uncharacteristically clumsy. Muqing realizes that it must have sounded like a dig at Fangxin's failed relationship with Xianlan. He purses his lips, dissatisfied with himself. Fangxin had clearly wanted to make amends with her, to do whatever he could to support the woman he had once loved. He was still prepared to accept his creepy ghost child, no matter the harm to his reputation. You want me to answer this? Fangxin says. He sounds puzzled. It's your prayer. Muqing scowls because he hadn't really thought this through. He wanted to complain about it, to bicker a little bit, but Fangxin is in another one of his weird moods, unreasonably pliant and accommodating. Muqing can already tell he won't be getting anything like a mood-clearing argument out of this, not tonight. Do what you want, he says. I can't answer it. They should know better than to ask an abstinent martial god about their marriage problems. Fangxin looks at it, and at Muqing, then unrolls the scroll and begins to read. He's tense, laser-focused, the familiar expression somewhat jarring when paired with his rumpled collar and loose hair, which Muqing realizes he now associates with a very different context. Fangxin finishes reading, then looks up. I don't know, he says. You could send a dream to scare him away from Brussels, but that won't keep him faithful for long. His expression turns inwards. He has to want to stay, he says, and now Muqing is sure he's talking about Xianlan. It makes no sense that Xianlan would leave Fangxin when he's willing to take so many risks to keep her and their ghost child safe. But Mu Qing knows himself well enough to be aware that he has never understood affairs of the heart, much less the kind of relationship Fangxin shared with a former courtesan. When he lets himself think about it, he worries he'll misunderstand whatever they're doing now. Fangxin blinks at him, and Mu Qing realizes he expects a reply. "Put it in that basket," Mu Qing says, gesturing at the bin for unanswerable prayers. "And come closer. If you're going to insist on being here, you can help triage." Fangxin comes over immediately, sits facing the desk, and takes the scroll Mu Qing hands him. "Make notes about any of them that are answerable. If you're not sure, put them here." He gestures at the side of the desk. "If they're out of scope, they go in the bin." They work in silence for a time. Fangxin takes the scrolls he's handed, makes notes on a few. He puts most of them aside, puts one or two in the unanswerable prayer bin. It's oddly companionable, unlike the slightly antsy feeling of judgment Mu Qing has to face when he works with most of his subordinates in the room. A shushan passes before the hands brush as Fangxin hands back a scroll. It's nothing, a small everyday accidental contact, but Fangxin sucks in a startled breath and hand drawing back instantly as if he's touched a hot coal, a death butterfly. "Sorry," Fangxin says. His voice is higher than usual, almost panicked. "I know I can't," he gulps back. "Sorry." Mu Qing stares at him, baffled, then takes a scroll. Fangxin leans back in the chair, holding very still.
"What are you waiting for?" Mu Qing asks. "Take another one."
Fangxin does, reaching out carefully as if trying to be certain he won't brush against Mu Qing's hand again. He has been acting increasingly strange recently. They haven't sparred more than a handful of times since the fall of Sa Jun, and only then with sword or bow, not once in hand-to-hand combat. Fangxin declared himself too busy when Mu Qing suggested that kind of sparring about a week ago. Mu Qing is not an especially tactile person by nature, but it occurs to him, watching Fangxin, that the other god hasn't touched him even once since the first time they started whatever it is they have been doing, since the first time Mu Qing told him to touch himself. Fangxin hasn't often reached out his hand to Mu Qing in the past, but over the last 2 years the occasional friendly clap on the shoulder had become almost normal between them.
"Are you," Mu Qing says, testing the idea, "are you avoiding touching me on purpose?"
Fangxin blinks at him, motions freezing midway through unrolling the scroll he just took from the highest pile. He goes tense all over, like a child caught stealing, like a rabbit under a stooping hawk.
"Well?" Mu Qing asks.
"You said not to," Fangxin says. He looks confused, like Mu Qing has just asked him something incredibly obvious, like what color the sky is, like whether Jilian's cooking is edible or not. Mu Qing thinks back. He did tell Fangxin not to touch him that first time. Was that really the last time Fangxin had touched him? It seems like it might have been.
He huffs out a breath. "Not during that," he says. "The rest of the time it's fine."
Fangxin blinks at him, then nods. "All right," he says. He sounds cautious.
"What, am I going to set a trap for you?" Mu Qing asks, voice sharp. "I'll tell you if it's a problem."
Fangxin would usually have a sharp retort to that, would tell Mu Qing that of course he'd lay a trap. He's a scheming bastard who lives to trip people up. Instead, he only looks relieved. "All right," he says again, but his shoulders drop a little bit, some of the tension draining out of his body. Mu Qing looks at him and wonders what the fuck has gotten into him. Fangxin won't tell him. Mu Qing asked the last time he was like this, and Fangxin just blinked at him and shrunk even smaller into himself, like he could avoid answering if he just looked pathetic enough. "I'm fine," he'd said. Then, with a pitiful attempt at normality, he'd added, "What, are you worried about me?"
"As if I'd worry," Mu Qing had shot back before sweeping out of the room to take care of his disciples' training for the day.
Now, looking at Fangxin sitting across from him, perusing a scroll, voluntarily doing paperwork that isn't even his own, Mu Qing thinks that yes, he is worried. Fangxin stays dutifully processing paperwork until nearly dawn.
He only leaves when Wuching chases him out before his staff can get any ideas about the general needing help from another god. Wuching gets called down to the mortal realm to deal with a severe-level ghost making a fuss over pedestrian resentment. His wife remarried after his death, and though she and the second husband are long dead by now, the ghost in question refuses to move on and was inevitably overtaken by ill will. In the end, Wuching has to dissipate his ashes, thankful that the body had been buried in the town's graveyard. It would have been more challenging if the ghost had bothered to guard his weak point better. When Wuching returns to the Heavenly City, he fills out the appropriate paperwork, handing it to Lei Su to take to Ling Wen's palace for filing. There are days he wonders if he'd have ascended if he'd known the quantity of paperwork, and this is one of them. The ghost had been petty and malicious, stealing and vandalizing, escalating to the point that one of his lower incense tire followers mentioned it several times. "Are you busy?" he asked Fang Xin in the private array. The fight was unsatisfying and Wuching is antsy, distracted. "Let's spar." Fang Xin replies almost immediately. "Hello to you too," he says, sarcastic. "What if I'm busy, Wuching? Some of us have prayers to answer." "Bullshit," Wuching shoots back. "You hate paperwork." Fang Xin has always done his paperwork in fits and starts, conscientious but easily distracted by more active pursuits. His prayer sorting system appears to run more on random chance than anything more organized. It's a system that is far too common in the heavens, inefficient and relying on quantity to convey real problems. His subordinates do more of the sorting than Wuching's, but then again, Fang Xin has always been more comfortable with delegation than Wuching. "Fine," Fang Xin concedes, which Wuching takes to mean that he's been looking for an excuse to skip out on paperwork for some time now. "Training grounds in 10 minutes," he says and closes out of the array. When Wuching meets him there, Fang Xin has stripped out of the top layer of his former robes, sword in hand. Wuching nods in greeting and then launches himself at Fang Xin at top speed, pulling his saber as he goes. Their blades meet with a satisfying clang, sending a shockwave of spiritual energy out to ruffle the grass at the edges of the ring of packed earth. Wuching leaps back, away from a retaliatory strike, and Fang Xin follows. They trade blows time and again. The two of them are evenly matched for all that their fighting styles are different, and Wuching feels his blood racing, his pulse speeding up with the enjoyment of such equal combat. So few people can give him a good fight these days. Few still are willing to hit their hardest, to trust Wuching to hold his own. Fang Xin may be the only one. Fang Xin wins the first match by a hair's breadth, as Wuching falters at that thought. They immediately square up again, and Wuching wins the second round conclusively. They pause then, and Wuching offers Fang Xin a hand up from where he sprawled in the dirt with the tip of Wuching's saber at his throat. "Come on," Wuching says, feeling something dark and possessive stirring inside him at the sight of Fang Xin still beneath his blade. "That's enough." In the past, Fang Xin would have insisted on a third bout as a tiebreaker. Before Jilian's third ascension, it would have been sharp, demanding. After, it would have been almost cajoling, as if Fang Xin wanted to spend more time with Wuching and didn't know how to ask in any other way. Now he takes Wuching's hand, grip firm and solid and warm, and holds himself up without a word of complaint. He follows Wuching back to his palace, seemingly content to walk in silence, and doesn't seem at all surprised when Wuching heads straight for his bedroom, taking them through the back hallways that his staff almost never uses at this time of day. Lei Su has seen them at least once that Wuching knows of, but she's never brought it up, not even in his personal array, and Wuching thinks she might have even approved. She might even approve, though she's hard to read. He'll have to talk to her about it at some point, but he feels himself flush at the mere thought. Easier not to admit to what they're doing, not to think about it too hard, to wonder what it means, what it might continue to mean. When they enter the bedroom, Fang Xin immediately doffs his sword belt, hanging it on the same chair as always. Then he stands still, hands at his sides and waits. His hair is mussed from the fight, dirty from being slammed into the packed earth training grounds, and Wuching steps forward before he can think about what he's doing. Fangxin shudders once, almost violently, when Muqing removes his hairpiece to let his hair fall around her shoulders in dark waves. He trembles all over, fine vibrations like a nervous horse, when Muqing carts the dirt and dying leaves out of his hair with his fingers. Other than that, he holds perfectly still. He doesn't reach out. He doesn't attempt to touch Muqing, doesn't move a single voluntary inch. "Sit down," Muqing says, and Fangxin folds immediately to his knees, warrior graceful and clumsily inelegant at the same time. Muqing had meant in a chair, but it seems like Fangxin is content taking things literally again. He huffs out a small breath and moves to stand behind Fangxin, where he can see his hair clearly. He pulls the comb from his sleeve and starts at the bottom. He works out the tangles methodically, pulling out dirt and leaf fragments and combing with slow, even strokes until Fangxin's hair lies dark and gleaming over his shoulders. Fangxin's breath slows as he works until he's virtually still under Muqing's touch, a living statue of a martial god entirely at Muqing's mercy. Muqing steps back and hears Fangxin's breath catch in his throat. It's almost, but not entirely, silent, as if he's trying to muffle the noise. Muqing walks around him and settles into his usual chair. When, he wonders, did this become something usual, expected, something he thinks of as normal? He shakes his head. When he looks over, Fangxin's hands are fisted in the cloths of his robes over his thighs. He's holding utterly still, eyes closed. He looks like he would be content to stay right where he is, like he needs nothing more than to remain quiet and still at Muqing's bidding, but that's not what they are here to do, is it? Stand, Muqing says, and Fangxin rises to his feet. Outer robes folded, inner robes on the bed, Muqing says, because that's normal now. Boots by the chair, quickly, he adds, to see what effect it will have. Fangxin's fingers fumble at his belts first, but then he moves more swiftly than Muqing has seen outside of battle, stripping off and folding his heavy embroidered outer robes with practiced gestures, towing off his boots, moving to the side of the bed and laying out his two layers of inner robes, head to foot as he has each time they've done this. He stops, bare and visibly aroused, and stands at the side of the bed waiting for instructions. He's become so good at following Muqing's lead, at doing exactly what he's told. His hair is hanging into his face, and Muqing has a moment to resent it for blocking his line of sight. Lie down on your back, Muqing commands. Fangxin complies. It feels heady, that compliance, that obedience. Muqing makes a small, satisfied sound and sees Fangxin shiver. Good, he says, because it always gets a reaction. Very good. Fangxin's hands grasp at the outspread fabric of his robes, but he doesn't move, flat on his back, cock straining up into the air. What is it you want today? Muqing muses, watching Fangxin's breathing pick up again. I wonder. Fangxin closes his eyes, and Muqing doesn't like that. Look at me, he commands. Fangxin turns his head, opens his eyes, and meets Muqing's gaze. His pupils are wide, his expression open, vulnerable, and filled with something Muqing can't identify. Keep looking at me, Muqing says, or I'll stop. Fangxin nods. Good, Muqing says, and watches his cock jolt. He feels a smile quirk on his lips and doesn't hold it back. Good, he says again. Now, he says, straight to it, I think. Touch your cock, Fangxin. Show me what you want. Fangxin blinks, wrenches his eyes back open again to keep looking at Muqing and starts stroking his cock with his right hand. Stop, Muqing says. Fangxin stops immediately, though his hips judder. He's obviously worked up, more on edge than Muqing can remember seeing him before. Wet your hand, Muqing says. You choose how. Fangxin blinks, seeming to struggle with the choice, then raises his hand and licks it before placing it back on his erection. Good, Muqing says, and Fangxin whines low in his throat. He's never done that before. Not like that, Muqing thinks. Touch yourself, Muqing says. Don't come yet. Fangxin complies, utterly still except for the motion of his hand on his cock, eyes locked on Muqing. His eyelashes flutter from time to time. His face flushes. Mooching watches his body strain to remain in place, muscles taut, and feels powerful like he's been given a gift, like he's found something he didn't know he was missing.
"Is that all you want?" he asks.
Fangxin whines again.
"Words," Mooching commands. "Tell me what you want."
Fangxin's eyelids flutter again, but he doesn't look away.
"More," he gasps.
"That's not very helpful," Mooching sings sourly, and frowns in response. How is he supposed to guess what more means in this context? He's not the one who has sired a child. He's the one who has never done any of this before. But Fangxin's expression goes still, shuttering off.
"I'm sorry," he says. He sounds desperate. "I don't..."
Mooching shakes his head. "Hush," he says, and Fangxin bites his lip. He's still stroking himself, still holding still, still meeting Mooching's eyes.
"More how?" Mooching asks. "Be specific."
Fangxin's hand stutters and he has to visibly force himself to keep going.
"Inside," he says. I want you to fuck me. God," he says, words distorted around a moan. "I want..."
Mooching frowns again.
"I'm not touching you," he says.
Fangxin knows that's impossible. He can't have forgotten, can he? He didn't forget in the cave, so how could he forget now when he's not poisoned?
Fangxin is still watching him.
"I know," he says. He sounds off-kilter somehow.
"I know." "So what do you want?" Mooching asks, trying to figure this out.
"I said," Fangxin insists. "I... please."
Mooching replays the fractured words. "You can finger yourself," he says after a moment. "You can even pretend it's me touching you."
Fangxin's gasp this time sounds like a man who had the air knocked out of him in combat. All the violence of a lethal blow was none of the bone-crunching impact.
"Yes," he gasps, left hand already skimming between his legs.
"Please."
Mooching watches him, seeing Fangxin's gaze go distant, and then remembers something he's overheard. "Isn't oil necessary for this?" He's sure it is.
"Stop," he says. Fangxin freezes, expression shocked, open, almost betrayed.
"You'll hurt yourself," Mooching says.
"Wait." He obviously doesn't have anything designed for this, but he's pretty sure the massage oil he uses for minor sprains will be fine. He stands and retrieves a soapstone container, then, following some instinct he doesn't examine too closely, walks over to the bed and places it directly next to Fangxin. He tucks a strand of Fangxin's hair behind his ear, brushing the warm skin for a moment, and then goes back to his chair. Fangxin's eyes stay locked on him the entire time.
"Go ahead," Mooching says.
"Show me."
Fangxin removes the lid, dips the finger in, then his hand disappears between his legs, moving steadily. He clearly knows what he's doing.
Mooching doesn't particularly feel the need to see the details, which seem messy and somewhat unhygienic. Instead, he keeps watching Fangxin's face, tracking the expressions that race over the long familiar features, changing them into something new.
"Keep going," Mooching directs. "Show me what you like."
Fangxin sobs, slicks his right hand from the container, and strokes his cock ever so slowly, the sound loud in the enclosed space. His left hand moves in jagged, thrusting motions. Every few thrusts he arches, visibly biting back noise.
"Let me hear you," Mooching says.
He's never asked that before, but he's never asked Fangxin to do this before either, and he's curious.
Fangxin gasps, hand going still on his cock, visibly freezing in place, and then a groan punches its way out of him as he comes, whole body shaking from the force of it.
It takes longer than usual, as if he's being wrung out from the inside. It seems as if the extra stimulation of his fingers made a very real difference, Mooching thinks.
Fangxin screwed his eyes shut at some point, so Mooching is free to look at the line of his body. Tanned skin and lean muscle, strong shoulders and defined legs. His chest and belly are streaked with white and he looks like he might be crying.
"I..." Fangxin gasps. He seems to be struggling for breath.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. Mucheng blinks, confused, but Fangxin lapses back into silence, eyes still shut, tears leaking from the corners of his eyes.
Clean up when you're done, he says when the silence stretches too long.
He stands and tosses a spare cloth onto the bed next to Fangxin.
The oil will be messier than usual, won't it?
Use this, he says, and then, because he feels unsettled and isn't sure how to explain why he's giving Fangxin a cloth for the first time,
don't expect me to do this again.
Then he stands and walks out of the room to give Fangxin space to recover himself, wondering what just happened, why he feels so off-kilter as a result. Fangxin slips out of his palace without a word this time. Mucheng dives into paperwork with a vengeance in an effort to distract himself from the feeling that something has gone awry, that he's done something wrong without meaning to. He always ends up doing something wrong. Why should this be any different? The next few days see a flurry of paperwork being sent to the palace of Ling Wen and unusual silence from Fangxin, who doesn't reply in the private area even once. A week or so later, Mucheng finally gets sick of feeling like he's being ignored, gets sick of the roiling, uncertain feeling in his gut. So he goes to General Nanyang's temple in person. The Middle Heaven officials don't even try to stop him the way they usually would, which is very strange. One or two look like they might be about to step in his way until a stocky woman with a high, tight bun raises a single hand and they all subside, looking away as Mucheng stalks through the halls he knows as well as his own, having helped redesign them to keep Fangxin from making incredibly stupid choices about material sourcing or load-bearing walls. When Mucheng storms into Fangxin's office, he sees uncharacteristically unruly stacks of paperwork on every surface, and Fangxin asleep at the desk in full armor, hair dull and obviously unwashed. He has dark circles under his eyes even in sleep. What the fuck? Mucheng has time to think in the bare moment before Fangxin wakes up. What? Fangxin demands. His expression shifts from something soft to an old, familiar, sorrowly unwelcome sneer. Is the great and efficient General Ranjen here to tell me I'm doing something wrong? Does he have a godly complaint or pearls of wisdom to scatter before this unworthy one? Mucheng stops in the doorway, shocked. Fangxin hasn't been so aggressive for years now. They fought, but it's not been this vicious a verbal assault, not since Sunwu. Mucheng had gotten used to the new normal, to half-heated bickering carried out mostly due to habit. He doesn't like the vitriol in these words. What is wrong with you? Mucheng demands, stepping in and kicking the door shut. Ignoring me in the array? What else am I supposed to do? Find you in the main square? Try to corner you in the public array? You know how the gods gossip. Fuck off, Fangxin says. You're the one who told me to leave you alone. What do you want now? Mucheng stares at him. I did what? He asks. Don't expect me to do this again, Fangxin says. He stares at Mucheng, expression aggressive but almost forcedly so. That's exactly what you said, so fuck off. Mucheng stares at him. He might have said something like that, but he'd been referring to handing Fangxin a piece of cloth. You look like shit, he says instead, and wants to take the words back when Fangxin flinches. Fuck off, Fangxin yells. Go find someone else to jerk around, Mucheng. I don't need your pity. He picks up a scroll, seemingly at random, and pointedly ignores Mucheng. He's holding it upside down. Something, Mucheng realizes, is very, very badly wrong. Pity? He asks. He keeps his voice even, tone low. What the fuck, Fangxin? Fangxin doesn't look at him. I don't, Mucheng says. He hates having to put his feelings into words. He can wheel and deal with the best of them. Learned that before he got a position at the palace lifetimes ago. He can set terms and maneuver his way past political minefields, but there is no lava field beneath him now, no threat of imminent death to loosen his tongue. I don't pity you, he says. Why would I? Fangxin's hand tightens on the scroll's ends. He doesn't reply. How could I? Mucheng asks. I don't.
Fangxin slams the scroll on the desk hard enough that one end of it tears. Muqing irrationally wants to take it, to patch it as if repairing a simple piece of paper might make this all better. He's always been better at patching up objects than repairing relationships with only his words.
You keep leaving, Fangxin says. His voice is choked up, tied with emotions Muqing can't read.
What am I supposed to think? I can't do this. I can't keep watching you leave.
He doesn't look up. His eyes are rimmed and red.
Just go away, he says, and his voice is so soft Muqing almost doesn't hear it when he continues. Please.
Fangxin sounds small, defeated, and Muqing doesn't have any idea what to say.
He decides to make a tactical retreat.
Who is he kidding? He flees.
Clearly, Muqing thinks, after he's taken out his frustration on several training dummies and some of his less useless lower officials, he's fucked something up by not knowing the first thing about how sex works. He checks the saber blade for damage. It's fine, so he sheathes it and leaves the courtyard a smoking wreck. He'll arrange for it to be cleaned up later. His office is haunted by the memory of Fangxin quietly helping him with paperwork. His bedroom is haunted by memories of Fangxin's pleasure, his quiet, unquestioning obedience and trust.
Muqing goes up to the roof to clear his set. As much as he doesn't want to admit it, he needs help. He needs to talk to someone who can tell him what he's done wrong, and while his first instinct might be to turn to Jilian, that won't actually help. His Highness is very nearly as new to these things as Muqing himself, having followed the same abstinent path for 8 centuries. But he clearly hasn't bothered to keep his vows. Jilian's advice would be well-meaning, but he can't actually tell Muqing how to navigate this kind of relationship without breaking his vows, without losing his cultivation. For all his merits, Fangxin is no Crimson Rain to top Muqing's dissipated spiritual energy up at will. Plus, Jilian would end up telling Huochang, and Muqing refuses to ever allow Crimson Rain this far into his confidence, or Fangxin's. If he knew the right terms, he might bully some of Ling Wen's officials into turning up literature for him, but he doesn't, and they all gossip. He's tired of being talked about. Zhuan Yijin knows less about sex than Muqing, and Yin Yu would tell Huachang. That leaves one person. Muqing digs up a few bottles of halfway decent alcohol from his palace's stores, kept for guests who do not abstain. He dresses just a little bit more formally than usual, cleans his saber and then forces himself to stop procrastinating and heads towards General Ming Guang's temple. Pei Ming is in conversation with one of the many minor northern gods, holding court in his usual effusive manner as Muqing enters the halls.
"General Zhuanzhen," Pei Ming exclaims. "A genuine pleasure to see you."
His smile is almost real, Muqing thinks. He has been more friendly to the gods of Jianle since the world nearly ended, since he learned about the sins of his former companions Shi Wudu and Ling Wen. He and Fangxin drink together from time to time, Muqing thinks.
"Ming Guang," he says and nods.
"And he knows the god before them, as he knows all the martial gods, no matter how small. But this one was particularly vicious in the area after the Land of Tender affair. Muqing will not grant him any face."
"Wang Su," the man says. He looks back and forth between Pei Ming and Muqing, looking for all the world like an animal caught in a trap.
"I've just remembered," he blurts. "I have another appointment. He swallows. "Excuse me," he says, bows, and all but runs from the room. Pei Ming chuckles, as if that display of abject cowardice were amusing rather than insulting, as if Muqing has performed some kind of minor street-busking trick.
"Well," he says, "that's one way to end a tiresome conversation. What can I do for you, Zhuanzhen?"
Muqing sets the jars of alcohol on the table and settles into a seated position.
"A conversation," he says. "In confidence," he adds. "An area, if you will."
Pei Ming's eyebrow arches, but he comes over to the table and settles down.
"And why would I do that?" he asks. He's smiling, but his eyes are sharp. "Areas are tiresome, after all, and information is power. You know this better than most, if I'm not mistaken."
Muqing could play this game, could beat around the bush, could draw Pei Ming into verbal traps, match wits until one of them concedes. He finds he's unwilling to make the attempt. Because if you don't, I might remember who spiked my drink at the Lantern Festival 597 years ago, he says. And I might tell several people who might be inclined to take it very poorly. Pei Ming goes very still. You're serious, then, he says. How interesting. He waves a hand and a silencing spell shimmers into life around the two of them. You're going to listen, Mooching says. And then you're going to tell me what I've done wrong, how to fix it, and you'll never breathe a word of this to anyone else. Pei Ming looks intrigued now. Very well, he says. Do tell. Mooching lays out the exact circumstances of the cave, Fang Xin's apparent willingness to continue in the same pattern after Mooching sorted out Cao Jun. He is as clinical as he can be, avoids as much detail as he can. Sharing even this much feels like a betrayal, but he has somehow hurt Fang Xin, and he needs to know how so he can stop doing it. He has never wanted to hurt Fang Xin. Not really. When he mentions Fang Xin's odd reaction to praise, Pei Ming's eyebrow quirks, when he describes Fang Xin's habit of near-boneless collapse after orgasm, Pei Ming frowns. And then what do you do? Pei Ming asks, interrupting him. Mooching blinks at him. Nothing, he says. An orgasm is a point of sex, isn't it? What more is there to it beyond the messy cleanup and bodily mechanics of it? He doesn't want anything to do with that. Pei Ming puts his face in one hand, then reaches out, takes a jar of liquor, and downs most of it in a few swift swallows, skipping cups entirely. Let me get this straight, he says. You sit there and watch. Tell him what to do. Praise him when he does something right. Punish him when he does something wrong. And then as soon as he comes, you just walk out of the room and leave him there alone? Mooching shrugs. It's a fairly accurate description. He doesn't see why Pei Ming needs to sound so judgmental about it. Oh shit, Pei Ming says, expression somewhere between pained and gleeful. You have absolutely no idea what you're doing, do you? What part of his scattered cultivation path made you think otherwise? Mooching bites out. He's getting annoyed and starting to feel very foolish, which only sparks his temper. You should stay, Pei Ming says. Afterwards, it's... he frowns. It's intense, that kind of thing. Like someone sniping your kill in the middle of a hard fight. It leaves the body confused. If you don't do it right, it can be bad for both of you. Maybe worse for him. Mooching glares at him. How do you know all of this? He demands. Pei Ming shrugs and holds his hands out. Some women like that kind of thing, he says. Directions and praise and clear expectations. And they're a lot less likely to curse me up the next day or commit arson in a temple looking for revenge if I take good care of them immediately afterwards. His expression goes distant. Mooching doesn't point out that those are alarmingly specific examples. Physical contact helps, Pei Ming says. Sometimes more praise, cleanup, confirmation, contact. He shakes his head. You look like shit, he says. I bet he does too. Fang Xin does look like shit, but Mooching sees no reason to confirm that. You, Pei Ming says and trails off. All right, he says. Here's what you're going to do. You can't touch him during, right? He waits for Mooching to nod. So you find out how long after orgasm you have to wait, and then you help him clean up, even if you hate it. You tell him he did well, and you fucking cuddle. Skin-to-skin contact is better if you're not too much of a prude. You've been fucking this up, Zhuanzhen. It's no wonder Ling Wen's been bitchier than usual about his paperwork this last week or so. Some part of Mooching, the part that's always keeping track of information he might be able to use, files away the fact that Pei Ming appears to have spies among Ling Wen's people. The rest of him is running through these instructions. He's not enthusiastic about the idea of all of it, but Fang Xin is a mess. He needs to make amends. And he thinks he might not mind that much if it's Fang Xin. Pei Ming looks at him for a long moment, and something seems to shift in his expression. I'm sorry, he says, and Mooching blinks at him. About the Lantern Festival, he continues. It was a shitty thing to do. Mooching thinks back to it. He's pretty sure Shi Voodoo put Pei Ming up to it, but there's no point bringing that up. Shi Voodoo's long dead, and that was by far the least of his crimes. It was, he agrees.
Even if it had been by far the weakest dose he'd been subjected to, even if he'd been able to meditate through it, making his excuses to miss a festival banquet, had been awkward. He'd fought with Fangxin over the next day, a fight that left both of them bloodied in mind and body and unwilling to approach each other for months.
"Is there anything else?" Muqing asks, seeing the shimmer of the privacy array in the edges of his vision. Pei Ming smiles, rueful.
"You live up to your reputation," he says, and Muqing doesn't know what to make of that.
"No," Pei Ming says.
"Come ask me again if you keep fucking this up," he says.
"You don't need to blackmail me to ask for advice," he says. "What are friends for?"
Muqing hasn't ever considered Pei Ming a friend, but perhaps Pei Ming and Fangxin are closer than he expected. He nods and Pei Ming waves a hand, dispersing the array.
"Stick around and I'll tell you about my last trip," Pei Ming starts in a tone of voice that can only mean one thing.
Muqing is on his feet before he's consciously thought about how to react, and Pei Ming chuckles.
"Go on," he says and waves a hand.
"Thanks for the booze," he says and finishes the first jar, reaching out for the second. Muqing nods at him, forcing politeness, and leaves as swiftly as he can without being seen to run. When he returns to his palace, Lei Su has arranged for the courtyard to be cleaned, for the training dummies to be replaced. Muqing wonders how he can reward her without it seeming like a bribe. She's by far the most competent of his officials, for all that she's only about 200 years old.
"General," she says, "you have visitors."
Muqing scowls and she waves a hand.
"They have a standing invitation," she says. "Well," she amends, "one of them does."
Muqing sighs and nods because there's only one them that meets that criteria.
"Thank you," he says. "Take tomorrow off."
Huochang is sitting half in Jilian's lap in the main hall of Muqing's palace, shamelessly twirling a strand of his husband's hair around his fingers as if he has no sense of dignity at all.
"Muqing," Jilian says, clearly delighted, and Huochang straightens up with a poorly concealed frown.
"Hello," Muqing says. "Is something wrong?"
Jilian pouts and Huochang exudes a few of those creepy silver butterflies.
"Why do you assume something is wrong?" Jilian asks.
"Can't we just visit?"
Muqing takes a seat across from them and sends an official for tea.
"You could," he agrees. "But you don't, and he..." He glares at Huochang, who smiles at him like the asshole he is. "Hates the heavens, so either something's wrong or else you need something."
Jilian deflates, unreasonably disappointed. Huochang glares at Muqing as though he were responsible for Jilian's volatile moods. That's Huochang's job now, and Muqing has rarely been so glad to shed a responsibility after that seemingly endless year of the ghost's absence. And even if he can't stand Crimson Rain most of the time, and finds his 800-year-long obsession with Jilian deeply unnerving, he has to admit Huochang would do anything to keep Jilian happy and safe.
"It really is a social call," Huochang says. "Gogo wanted to see you. I came along because gods are assholes," Gogo accepted, "and I don't trust any of you."
Muqing wants to protest. "Who kept Jilian safe while you were gone?" he wants to demand, but there is no point to it. He hadn't done much and Jilian would have been fine on his own anyway. He did Fangxin, and if he'd survived 800 years, well, what was one more?
"Oh," Muqing says, feeling off balance, uncertain what to do next.
The official returns with tea, a light floral white of a variety they drank often enough in Jianle. Huochang's expression brightens when he smells it and he pours a cup for Jilian immediately, then, at a sharp look, pours a cup for Muqing as well and allows Jilian to pour for him. It's disgustingly domestic. It makes Muqing ache with the want he's never been able to identify. That kind of companionship came with marriage, which his vows made forbidden. What point was there in wanting something impossible?
Muqing has always wanted impossible things.
The conversation is initially stilted, but Jilian seems happy enough to chatter into the awkward silences, to take up both Huochang and Muqing's slack. When the two of them take their leave an hour later, Muqing feels irrationally better. They never did tell him what the purpose of the visit was. He wonders if perhaps he's been unfair, if Jilian is trying to actually be friends. Muqing has never been good at friendship.
He's never allowed himself the risk of trying.
Mucheng is tempted to rush over to Fang Xin's palace, but he doesn't think cornering him will help things any more than it did last time. Instead, he starts sending small messages in the private array. "Have you eaten?" is one, after a spy reports that General Nanyang has been practicing in India more and more often. "You're working too late," is another, sent it nearly halfway through the night when a spy reports that General Nanyang is still working excessively long hours. He keeps this up for nearly a week, to no reply until he's up in the middle of the night again, tired and too worried to sleep.
"Take a goddamn break, Fang Xin," he sends, and some of his frustration bleeds through into his tone. It's intended as much for himself as for Fang Xin.
"Fuck off," Fang Xin sends back, snarling. "Leave me alone, you asshole."
Mucheng blinks. He has long since stopped expecting a reply.
"Make me," he says, instinctively pushing back against Fang Xin's demands.
"What do you want?" Fang Xin shoots back.
"I'm leaving you alone, what the fuck?"
"I want to apologize," Mucheng all but yells. "And I can't do that if you keep avoiding me when I never told you to in the first place."
Silence echoes in the array. Mucheng stares into the dimly lit corner of his office and wonders how he managed to fuck up trying to apologize. It figures, he thinks. Then the door begins to glow and slams open to reveal Fang Xin.
"What the fuck?" Mucheng says. "You just drew an array to get here?"
Fang Xin steps into the room, shuts the door behind himself surprisingly quietly, and drops into the chair across from Mucheng. His hair is still dull, though at least it's been combed properly. He's still in full armor, though Mucheng knows he's been doing nothing but paperwork for the last 3 days, and there's no reason to be wearing so much weight.
"Did you want me to walk over in the middle of the night?" Fang Xin demands. "What happened to thinking about gossip?"
He has a point, Mucheng has to admit. He blinks, thrown off balance in a way very few people have ever been able to do to him.
"So?" Fang Xin says, leaning back in the chair and crossing his hands over his chest.
"I don't hear an apology." Mucheng glares at him, instinctively. Then he works to rein in his expression to do something less antagonistic.
"I'm sorry," he says. "I fucked up."
He takes a deep breath.
"I don't really know how this all works," and he pauses, looking down at the desk, at his hands clenched into fists. "I didn't mean to hurt you," he admits. "I'm sorry."
Fang Xin doesn't say anything for a very long moment.
"You didn't," Fang Xin starts.
"I did," Mucheng insists, "and I didn't mean to, but you still look like shit and that's my fault."
Fang Xin barks out a laugh, bitter and half-voiced.
"Not everything is your fault," he says.
"Sure, he could have used your words too," Mucheng shrugs, still staring at his hands. "Apparently we both need to be better at that for this to work."
Fang Xin takes a shocked breath. When Mucheng finally looks up, Fang Xin is staring at him with open longing on his face. Mucheng reaches out toward him. Fang Xin flinches back, just a tiny bit, before he freezes in place. Mucheng keeps the hurt off of his expression with years of long practice. Fang Xin has no reason to expect anything but violence at his hands, does he? Mucheng has so rarely touched him in kindness since they ascended. Mucheng stands up and walks around the desk. Telegraphing his motions clearly, he takes Fang Xin's hands and pulls him to his feet. Awkwardly, he pulls Fang Xin into an embrace.
"Your armor's uncomfortable," he complains, and Fang Xin laughs.
"Come on," Mucheng says. They need to talk more, he's sure. It's going to be terrible. But for now, he thinks, maybe Fang Xin will understand actions rather than words. Mucheng draws Fang Xin to his bedroom, where the door is still key to Fang Xin's spiritual energy.
"Open it," he says.
Fang Xin blinks at him, then focuses, makes a series of seals that open the door. He turns back to look at Mucheng, clearly astonished.
"You kept it," he says. His tone is raw, full of an emotion Mucheng can't name.
"Get in," Mucheng says, shoving him into the room. Then, because he needs to say things, he needs to tell Fang Xin things directly.
"Of course I kept it. I trust you."
Fang Xin stares at him, then glances at the bed, at Mucheng.
He opens his mouth, then closes it again. "This isn't about sex," Mooching says, swallowing down irrational anxiety. "I mean, not right now. I just..." He closes his eyes to get the words out. "I haven't been sleeping well." Fangxin huffs a small, almost laugh. "Who are you laughing at?" Mooching demands. "You haven't been sleeping either."
"No," Fangxin admits.
"I thought you didn't like my armor."
Mooching does like Fangxin's armor under the appropriate circumstances.
It's sturdy and functional and still has echoes of the style of Xianle, a small reminder of their shared history, the country that so few people still remember.
"I don't like hugging it," Mooching says instead. "Take it off."
Fangxin blinks at him.
"I'll tell you what to do," Mooching says. He's trying to figure out how to make this work.
"No sex now, but..." He pauses.
"That way I can touch you?"
He hopes that's an acceptable compromise. He really doesn't know what Fangxin is getting out of this. He'll have to steel himself for that conversation, but he's so tired right now. To his surprise, Fangxin beams and starts unbuckling his armor with hasty fingers.
"Slower," Mooching says. "Set it on the chair."
Fangxin complies perfectly. When he comes to the sword belt, he pauses, looks at Mooching for permission. Mooching feels himself smile and goes to sit on the edge of the bed.
"Good," he says. "Yes, you can remove that too."
Fangxin's eyes go darker as he complies. When he stands there in only his robes, Mooching nods.
"Shoes off," he says. "Outer robes off and folded, then come here."
Fangxin's hands shake very slightly as he obeys. He steps over to stand before Mooching, motions almost hesitant. Mooching stands and holds his arms out, echoing the posture Jilian took before him day after day.
"Undress me," he says. "Leave the inner robes."
Fangxin swallows. His hands are shockingly gentle. Mooching has seen these hands break necks, break noses, destroy minor gods and major ghosts. They are calloused and battered from years of work, and they touch Mooching's clothing and brush against his skin as if he is made of spun glass, as if he is something immeasurably precious. Mooching holds still as his belts are unfastened, as the ties of his robes are untied, as Fangxin removes them, then pauses and holds them, waiting.
"Fold them," Mooching says, and Fangxin nods and does so.
His obedience is just as heady this time as it has ever been.
"Continue," Mooching directs,
and Fangxin strips his next layer of robes, leaving Mooching in trousers and a single light robe.
"Fold those," Mooching says, and then sits on the edge of the bed. "Then take down my hair," he directs.
Fangxin's hands are gentle, slow, almost worshipful. Mooching tries to think of the last time someone undid his hair for him and draws a blank. He's not sure he has ever allowed someone this close. Has he ever been in a position where he might ask this of someone and trusted them enough to make such a demand? Fangxin stops, holding his hair ornaments, and Mooching smiles up at him.
"Turn around," he directs and stands.
"My turn." He takes down Fangxin's hair, handing him the ornaments in turn, finger combing the hair as it falls over Fangxin's shoulders.
"Put them over there," he directs, gesturing at a low dressing table. "Then come back here."
Fangxin's obedience is perfect. Mooching watches him walk, motion smooth and fluid, admires the lines of his shoulders, the pace of his stride. Fangxin is a powerful martial god, one of the top four most powerful in the heavens, Jilian accepted. Having him obey is a heady feeling, better than a fight, far better than the bubbling lightness of alcohol, all of the elation with none of the loss of control. Fangxin places each piece on the table with small, quiet clicking sounds, then turns and walks back to Mooching. He's half-hearted, but he doesn't seem to be paying it any attention.
"Turn down the bed," Mooching directs, stepping back.
Fangxin complies, then pauses. He clears his throat.
"Can I?" he asks, blinking as if he's worried he's done something wrong.
Mooching gestures for him to go on.
"I never said you can't talk," Mooching says.
Maybe Fangxin needs a reminder.
"I want to sleep on this side," Fangxin says quickly.
He is gesturing at the side closer to the door.
"Can I?"
he asks. Muqing remembers Fangxin sleeping on the floor in shared rooms after the fall of Jianle, how he'd always placed himself closest to the door or window to the largest threat. It seems he still hasn't shed his bodyguard training, even 800 years later. All right, he concedes, and sees Fangxin smile, small and shy. Muqing moves to climb into bed, scooting over farther than he usually does and pets the space next to him. Come here, he says, and Fangxin lies down on his back beside him. He appears to be trying not to take up too much space, only their arms brushing. Muqing sighs internally. The whole point of this was physical contact. Pei Ming said cuddling would help, didn't he? They lie there in silence, and it's increasingly awkward. Muqing has so little experience sleeping next to other people outside of an overcrowded military camp. He shuffles in dissatisfaction, wanting to turn over onto his side, to sleep as he usually does, and hears Fangxin huff a small, almost amused breath. What? He says. Like I've done this before? Make it more comfortable if you're so amused, he demands. Fangxin's hands are on his shoulders immediately, pulling Muqing over onto his side until he's curled halfway on top of Fangxin, head pillowed on his chest. One broad arm curls over his waist. It's odd. It's not entirely objectionable. Fangxin's breath is slow and even under Muqing's head, a soothing, repetitive reminder of his presence, his existence, his trust. I'm too heavy, Muqing complains, and Fangxin pulls him closer. You're not, Fangxin says, and pets his hair very gently. Maybe he's moving a strand of Muqing's hair out of his face. Stay? Muqing does not nuzzle closer into Fangxin's broad chest at that, but he doesn't move away either, and even goes so far as to throw a leg over one of Fangxin's own. Good, he thinks he hears Fangxin say, soft against the crown of his head as he drifts off to sleep, more comfortable than he can remember being in centuries. The End.